Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I am happy to represent the political center and have on the political right Senator Dan McKay. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Natalie and everybody else.
And on the political left, Councilwoman Shireen Gorbani.
Hello.
Welcome, Shireen.
Hi, nice to see you. We're on Zoom, and thanks to the listeners for tuning in.
I've gotten so fatigued by starting out the program by talking about either Donald Trump or the coronavirus, but he made so much news on the coronavirus this week that I think we need to talk about it. He had quite an interview with Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday. Dan, did you get a chance to watch that interview?
Yes, I did. Actually watched it because I knew that everyone would be excited to talk about Donald Trump at the start of the show, so I had a chance to watch it. And I think that many people sense a change in the president's tone, at least related to the pandemic and the virus response. Would you agree with that, Natalie?
I would. And I have to say, I've only seen segments of the interview. Shireen, did you see any of it, or just segments or a whole thing?
I did. I watched the whole thing.
Okay, great. So we're coming from a position of being informed here, I guess. You two are, at least. But I'm hearing a lot of people saying that this felt like a turning point, but also this is just the, academic in me, I guess, but they're saying that this interview will go down in journalism lore as one of the best interviews done, showed the preparation and the line of reasoning that a reporter could follow. Shireen, what was your take on it?
So I would agree with that, and I think it was an important moment to really get a handle on how on repeat this president is. He uses the same lines. He often uses the same logic. There is a slight shift in tone, which I am grateful for, and I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later. But Wallace really just stayed on it and knew what kinds of hits he would bring out. And when he did, he had the facts to back it up. And frankly, the president didn't have a lot of answers. And I think it was it was disturbing to watch, because he seems to be living in on some of the questions, just in an alternate reality.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to have this be a link that we put on with the program today, because I think it was that interesting. Dan, do you feel a subtle or dramatic change in direction coming out of the White House? We also had the president do his first coronavirus news conference in a long time. He basically made the comment that it's patriotic to wear a mask. He's pulling out a mask out of his pocket and holding it up in front of the cameras. It seems like there's a shift.
I think there is an acknowledgement. When you see the president say things like, it's going to get worse before it gets better, start to see that there is kind of a, I don't know if resignation, but it's a, the president, the White House is trying to get ahead of what is going to be an election issue for sure, the president's response to the coronavirus. And you see the president finally acknowledging that it's a national issue that people are concerned about and wants to acknowledge their concerns. In my opinion, that tone is the presidential tone we've needed. And I think we'll hopefully see, the mask shift is a big deal. I know that people are saying, well, it really shouldn't be, but it is. The president has tried to will away this pandemic and has tried to keep people, in a very, courageous, in my opinion, to try and keep the country running and acknowledge that the alternative is so costly and difficult. But this is, I don't know, it's going to be a very difficult election for the president, one way or the other, and it always is. And so it will be interesting to see, kind of how this plays out for the next few months.
And I'll say I think the images of the mask wearing is important, and I'm grateful to have those out there. At the same time, he was also still suggesting with his words that we don't know how effective they are, that he doesn't fully believe what the scientists are saying. So I think I will take it as a win. It's 150 days late, in my opinion, but I will take it as a win, because I think you're right, Dan. The acknowledgement of what we're really facing and the behaviors that are starting to change, even if the words haven't quite caught up yet, are going to be critically important. No other industrialized nation looks like we do right now.
Yeah. Well, and Shireen, on that point, I'm a big fan of Meet the Press, and their opening segment on Sunday was a quote from the Wall Street Journal, Vice President Mike Pence. This was on like June 16th, where he wrote in the Wall Street Journal about the panic being overblown, and he said, "We are winning the fight against an invisible enemy." And then the host showed in the past week, France with 455 new cases, Germany with 408 new cases, Italy with 182 new cases, and then they showed the graphic of the USA with 69,000 new cases. So I think, in my opinion, from the political center, this is the president, you know, being forced to do something because it's out of control in our country. Rough time. Hey, the president also has
the president was trying, you know, I'll just say really quickly, I think the president was really trying, and the scientists were there too, that they thought we would see a slowing of cases over the hotter summer months, that we would see, you know, certain things change about the virus. And so in the president's defense, you know, the science has not been clear all along. So it's not like I'm not going to give Shireen the ground that the president's finally listening to the scientists, because
I don't
publicly,
think he is.
The
scientists be clear, I don't
have
think
been
is.
All over the place. I mean, the CDC started out this virus saying, hey, masks aren't going to help anything. And that has changed, you know, over the last month or so. But that wasn't the tone in the very beginning. And so the hard part about being a leader in any situation is hindsight is always going to be better than what your thoughts are at the moment, always. And so persecuting, and I'm the same way with, you know, with Jenny Wilson, I'm the same way with Mayor Mendenhall. You know, I get where they're coming from in a lot of respects, and I'm trying not to throw hindsight in their face as to this is why we shouldn't have done X, Y, or Z, and instead be focused on moving forward. And as long as, and see, this is why, this is one of the many reasons why, if this wasn't an election year, we would all be handling this virus different. Remember, September 11th was a known tragedy to the face of the nation. We all saw it, and that event became unifying. And it's really interesting to me that this virus is invisible largely, and it is having almost the opposite effect of unifying the country. It is, in a lot of ways, tearing us to separate camps over separate issues. And I really, like, that's what I'm tired of, Natalie.
Yeah. You know, Dan, I agree with the division, the separation, but what's happening is one part of the separation is getting larger and larger and larger, and there's becoming a much smaller minority that is, you know, basically following the Trump narrative, which he seems to be changing. But let's be clear, he's got another problem. He's got federal troops in Portland. The violence is escalating. It's very frustrating to see a city mayor basically asking the federal government to stay away. Usually this would be in sync and working together. The image that I have is of people in, you know, battle suits and unmarked vehicles. That's not a pleasant visual. Shireen?
So, I think we're in crisis on many fronts. We're in a moment of a civil rights reawakening and understanding, but also in this case, civil liberties. So what is happening in our country when we have members of federal officials? It's a little bit unclear. More information is coming out all the time. But I think for many people, seeing, portions of our federal government in these unmarked vans, pulling people out of protests across party lines, is deeply disturbing.
Yeah. Dan, I have a hunch that you and Shireen are going to agree on this point.
Yes, I don't love the federal anonymous, you know, people being hauled into a van. You know, the stories, as some are telling them, are not, you know, being told by the federal government of what's happening, that kind of thing. But while I agree with her there, what I'm going to say is, if the mayors of these very liberal urban areas think that it is going to be a winning election issue to allow complete lawlessness, destruction, you know, rioting and burning of police cars or whatever it might be, if they think that's the direction that is going to get them success with their liberal agenda, I will tell you, most of the country, 99.9%, look at rioting and some of the things that have gone on in the riots with shame, not with pride. And, you know, you look at things like, you know, threatening neighborhoods and, you know, menacing people and all of those things are going along. If they think that lawlessness and allowing lawless society to take over their downtowns in these protests and riots, doing nothing about them, that will not win the hearts and minds of American people. And I will tell you, if President Trump is going to be reelected, it's going to be because the left wholly lets the protesters take over their message. And that's what they're at the greatest risk of right now.
So that's so deeply empty, because so many of these protests have been peaceful. And actually, when these federal troops arrived in Portland, it exploded a situation that was tense, but largely under control. So I think there's a real question here about what kind of escalation tactics are being used intentionally to support the narrative that you're trying to offer. I think it's a real critical question about everyone's civil liberties. And I feel like we can have agreement on that, and that I don't think anyone would want to see federal troops uninvited showing up in anyone's city and snatching people into vans. It's deeply terrifying. And I think we should all be worried about a president who thinks that's okay.
Yeah. Hey, we are almost out of time in this segment. Let's just take a few more seconds. I wanted to hear your quick thoughts, Shireen, about Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg being diagnosed with another bout of cancer in her liver this time. She has this quote. She said, "I've often said I would remain a member of the court as long as I can do the job full steam. I remain fully able to do that." That sounds like our RBG to me.
Yes. Difficult news, sad news, I think, for anyone who's dealt personally with cancer or a loved one who has. So I'm sorry to hear the news, as I would be truly for anyone facing this kind of moment, especially understanding that a lot of changes have been made in chemotherapy and understanding that a lot of changes have been made in treatment. And I hope that she's got, you know, energy and is doing well.
Yeah, full steam. And then, Dan, if you'll just close out the segment, we talked off air about the civil rights icon, John Lewis. You had some personal interaction with him. I'd love you to just briefly share that, maybe 30 seconds or
yeah.
so.
So I have met Congressman Lewis a few times, and the first time was in the, you know, if you've been to D.C. and you've walked around the tunnels really under the Capitol. I was a young college kid, and I had just finished my history of the civil rights movement course with the professor's name up at Utah State, Ross, and I forget the last name. We had just finished this study, and we talked about Congressman Lewis. And so I ran up to him and I said, "Congressman Lewis, it is a pleasure to meet you." And he said, "Well, how did you even know who I was?" And and honestly, that kind of humility from a guy who, in a lot of ways, was a civil rights icon. Just that kind of humility. He was that kind of guy. And I am going to miss his voice in Congress. And it just highlights we are losing touch with those great heroes of the civil rights movements of the 50s and 60s. And I hope that we will find ways to memorialize appropriately Congressman Lewis.
Yeah.
It's a tragic loss.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm with Dan McKay and Shireen Gorbani. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We've been talking about national news. We want to talk about some local issues in the second segment. And I'm going to start, Shireen and Dan, with the ProPublica story. This is an investigative journalism entity, does a lot of long-form journalism, but they took the time to write about Utah's response to the coronavirus and basically had the thread that we got off to a good start, and then state leaders started listening to business leaders and legislators that were pro-business, and in the end fell behind and did not listen to public health experts. So with that as a setup, Dan, your quick reaction to the ProPublica article, and then we'll ask Shireen the same.
Well, if it's any mystery that the Utah state government, the federal government, I mean, really any government entity tried to balance the difficult, you know, unknowns of the coronavirus. And there's still unknowns. I mean, there's still so many things we are learning. But if there's any mystery to the fact that we leaned towards getting people, you know, back to work and getting society productive, that won't be a surprise to anyone. I think the hard part is when you look through some of those things, at least as I read through what I got a chance to read through yesterday, was that health officials want to be listened to for everything all the time. And they always think, you know, and every person probably feels like it's this way. And it to me, there felt like some hurt feelings in there as well, that it wasn't handled well, you know, potentially internally. But, you know, this is, we are not going to, you know, bring our economy and our lives back to normal by, or as normal as they're going to be from now on, by, you know, just listening solely to health experts. So it doesn't surprise me.
Shireen, what was your reaction to the article? Do you basically agree with the premise?
Yeah, and there are a number of, I guess, shout outs to give along the way. The Salt Lake Tribune and also the Deseret had a number of articles that really supported the kind of culmination of what is in this article. So there's been a lot of local journalism along the way that has supported the case laid out here. And I think for many people who, you know, watched our state undercut local health authorities, are seeing what's happening in our long-term care facilities, even though we knew that that was an area that we should have put a focus on right away from what we were seeing in other states. The staggering rates of infection in San Juan County, the Test Utah debacle, the Healthy Utah app, which basically now does almost nothing. And don't forget the hydroxychloroquine situation. There have just been a number of missteps along the way. And I do not, you know, I know that this has been difficult. I know that there are a lot of unknowns. I think people were looking for a certain kind of leadership. And I understand we have a diverse state with a lot of different kinds of communities, but 80% of us live along the Wasatch Front. And I think there could have been a different approach for the urban suburban areas and really get this under control in a much quicker way. And now we're facing reopening schools in a month, you know, next month. And there's so much uncertainty, and I can understand what you're saying, Dan, because there's a lot of uncertainty and anxiety that certainly comes from the economic impacts of this. But what Natalie's told us over and over again, and I think what seems to be wisdom from the right and the left, is that appropriate public health response is that key to the economic response. And I know that you've been, and Dan in particular has been vocal about how important, like, the simple mask wearing stuff is. We're starting to have the data in Salt Lake County that's showing that the mask, from the time of the mask mandate on, we've seen our numbers really moving in the right direction, different from the rest of the state, honestly. And a big part of the reason for doing that is to keep our economy open. So these things are really tied together. I am, you know, just as disappointed as everyone else that it's become as politicized as it has. And I just think that we have to stay, if we can, as leaders, try to stay in a space where we're saying, okay, we're learning things, we're trying to adapt, we're trying to move this forward in a way that is protecting lives and livelihoods. This is a difficult time.
Mm. You know what I'm mindful of? Former Health and Human Service Secretary and our former Governor Mike Leavitt, I was chatting with him a week or so ago, and we were reflecting upon, you know, the leadership and things that are happening. And he said to me, he said, Natalie, nobody looks good during a pandemic. And I thought it was a really interesting comment, because pandemics are so brutal, and they're so, their depth and breadth is so hard to get your head around, that he just made the observation that, you know, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to have difficulties. You know, I there's no secret that I've kind of helped advise a lot of the state response. And I do think Utah should be proud of, our accomplishments in the sense that we have really limited the economic damage. And I just want to put a number to that. We got the most recent jobs report on Friday. The Utah economy's contracted by 2.8% June to June, and the nation has contracted by 8.7. So this is like a 3 times order of magnitude, a greater hit to the U.S. than to our state. And our state, you know, went into this very well positioned. But for every one of those contractions that our national counterparts are feeling, those are people furloughed, people unemployed, people that aren't paying rents, bankrupt businesses. And, you know, as much as I believe that you have to follow the health guidance to help the economy, you do have to keep the economy in your mind, because it's there's a lot of hurt that comes from a bad economy.
Disagreeing with that at all. I also think we're in, and I don't mean to minimize the families that have lost loved ones. My heart is with them, and I do think about them often and worry about, you know, those who are struggling for their lives now. But we have a largely young population. We have a very healthy population. So the impacts that we're seeing are a little different, too. I'm, of course, very worried, though, about what this means as we bring people back into schools, as we, I think in many cases, businesses are really trying to do it right. But there's definitely... We're at another turning point, and it'll be, I'm anxious to see what happens next.
Yeah. Yeah. Dan, what did you make of the news stories where they talked about the payroll protection program loans that went to Utah senators? They gave, you know, some of the data of how much money they received, and really kind of called out House members as if they'd done something wrong to participate in something that is there to help our economy.
Well, and you know, it's really quite sad. And look, every legislator has a job, right? And so whether or not their job or their company received funds that they then got because, you know, and you know, some of them that worked at Zions were called out because, you know, Zions administered a lot of these loans. And then they called, you know, these lawmakers, these Republican lawmakers especially, hypocrites, and because, you know, they were getting the advantage of these paycheck protection loans, etc. Look, again, I get it. Maybe what Natalie said earlier, which is nobody looks good during a pandemic, and so this was the press's effort to try and make themselves look bad during the process as well. I mean, heaven forbid a state lawmaker or anybody else try to support their family while the government has shut down their business. What a ridiculous idea for them. What they should do is they should really try and push their family out into the streets and be homeless and all of those things and avoid paying rent or paying their mortgage. It was just a stupid article. And so totally they were inspired to look dumb as well during a pandemic. So Natalie, thank you for that quote, because I now understand the press was feeling left out and now they feel included.
Go ahead, Shereen.
Well, sinister. So I actually read it a little bit differently. I didn't feel like it was made to call them out. It was just saying, here are people who also benefited from it that are in public office. And I think one of the things that highlights is that we do have a lot of business owners, people who are engaged in our economy in different ways. I didn't read it as negatively, but I guess maybe.
The social media stuff, Shereen, was hilarious. I mean, even you saw Gerke, if you go on to his Twitter feed and you read through a string of texts about the issue, he did the layout on why they were hypocrites. And so I probably am more caught up on that than even the article, because Lee Davidson does a pretty fair job of being, you know, factual about things.
Yeah.
I just, the calls for hypocrisy was, in my mind, it was ridiculous. But, and this isn't even a program they control. So it's not like lawmakers like were divvying out who was getting the money. It was just who made applications. I don't know.
Are they the lawmaker? Are they the same lawmakers, though, that continue to complain about the federal government?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, want to talk about shutting down businesses and shutting down the economy, absolutely. I'm in.
Well, I would just say, I'd take it through an economic lens, but they're doing exactly what we had hoped. Like, from an economist's point of view, we needed this aid and we needed to help these businesses. And we have a part-time legislature and they are business owners. And I'm grateful that they were able to put this money to work and keep people employed. That's exactly what it was designed to do. Dan?
And let's not be mistaken that the money will be paid back via inflation by all the employees and the business owners and all this other stuff. So lest there be any other great ideas about, you know, these massive stimulus things creating a dependency, the American people, including those businesses, will continue to pay on those amounts. So there
you go. I'm sure you have the same complaint about our military budget.
We've got to close with a quick 10-second gripes or gratitudes. And I'll just say that I thought it was really interesting seeing Nate Silver talk about Utah potentially becoming a purple state in the next one or two cycles. He's seen the reaction we have to Trump, and he's saying that. Shereen, you got a quick comment to end with?
I do. I just want to encourage people to look to the skies if you haven't had a chance to catch the NEOWISE comet. And a very special detail, a Utah connection, is Utah State University Space Dynamics Lab built that was the company that built the telescope that discovered NEOWISE. It is going to be brightest on today that we're recording Wednesday, but you'll be able to see it for a little bit longer.
Dan, your quick word, and it's probably a word.
We love Utah.
You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner with Dan McKay and Shereen Gourbani. The program is produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everyone, for listening.